You probably know that your gut microbiome is involved in just about every aspect of your health. So you want to pay attention to the trillions of microbes that live in you and on you. You can improve your microbiome health by doing things like avoiding anti-inflammatory pharmaceuticals, antibiotics, smoking, and avoiding certain foods like sugar and GMOs. But if you're doing all those things and you're still experiencing issues with inflammation, digestive problems, or stress, you can eliminate the guesswork and take a gut microbiome test. The test I trust the most and have used personally is Viome's Full Body Intelligence Test. That's because it's the first of its kind to holistically analyze three different areas of your body: your gut microbiome, your oral microbiome, and the health of your cells themselves. Then Viome combines your results, your biological data, and science to create a completely personalized health plan. Once you've got your results, it's easy to learn about your recommended nutrition, probiotics, and supplements with the Viome app. Their supplements are also high quality and are 100% custom formulated for you based on your test results. Give it a try and see if you notice a difference like I have. Go to viome.com/Dave and save $110 on the full body intelligence test. This is the most comprehensive, affordable test I've ever seen to give you this much information.
You're listening to The Human Upgrade with Dave Asprey. Formerly Bulletproof Radio.
You're listening to The Human Upgrade with Dave Asprey. Today is an in-person interview in the studio here in Austin, Texas, which is the home of barbecue made out of real meat. It's not the home of that fake garbage, industrial cricket, soy, whatever pea protein nonsense. And if you're from Austin and you eat that nonsense, you should go back to California. Did I say that? Oh, hold on. Are we rolling?
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I guess we are. My guest today would probably agree with me, but that's not what we're going to talk about. I'm just getting what I read this thing on Instagram that came up. It said, if you can be polarizing, you'll get more followers. I'm 20,000 followers away from 1 million followers on Instagram.
Nice.
So I'm polarizing my ass off right now, guys. So if you're not following, if you just, I'm almost there.
Yeah. What other topics can we talk about today that, you know, the gun debate, which we were, that's one. Yeah.
It turns out, I have tested this, it's really easy to hunt an impossible burger. Right, you put it up there, and then you just take like marshmallows, vegan marshmallows, and you just like kind of throw them a little bit, yeah. And dude, you're a hunter.
You're a hunter.
Yeah. Was that polarizing enough, or do I need to be more judgy?
Yeah, I think that was weak.
No, I'm feeling triggered.
Yeah.
If you don't recognize his voice, this is Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, a longtime friend, and he's here to announce that he's launching the Miracle Morning Coffee. Isn't that right?
That's right. I should be, man. I've left, only you know how much money I've left on the table by not launching Miracle Morning Coffee.
We could partner with Danger Coffee. I'm just saying. Yeah. You know, if you have a Miracle Morning, you might be dangerous because who knows what you might do.
There you go.
I'm just teasing because Hal is a devout, but what do you call it? If like Christian and like, you know, religious people are one thing and then you have Satanists on the other side, you'd be like a Satanist for the coffee religion. So what would that be called?
I'm so confused by that question.
You're hard to trigger, dude. This is pissing me off. No. So I would say he's a devout anti-coffee guy because you don't need a coffee when you have a Miracle Morning. And I'm like, screw that.
I'm actually not. I drink coffee.
When did you change your religion?
My wife loves Danger Coffee, by the way.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Always say you don't need coffee. Like, I've read your book.
So I go through periods. So okay. I'll go coffee. Then I was green tea for years. And then I don't know, maybe 6 months ago, I decided to go coffee again.
No way.
Yeah.
This is great news for the human species.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed. That's hilarious. I did not know that.
Yeah.
And I don't. By the way, guys, if you don't drink coffee, that's okay. It's on you. Just the studies seem to say that for most people, it's good for you. But there's also studies supporting green tea, right? So pick one. Do something good. But the reason Hal's on is not anything to do with coffee. It's because he has a brand new Miracle Morning book, and it's updated, expanded. And because we've been friends for a long time, and you came on for your first Miracle Morning, I think a couple times.
Years ago.
We're both in Austin. We got to sit down and go into some of the new content that you haven't shared with the world before. Are you up for that?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. some listeners may not know of your stuff, although, man, 2 million copies sold and you were just like the number two of all books sold. Like, you've really just gotten a huge wave of awareness over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. And that was the goal with the new book, is like to, yeah. or one of the goals is to, it was a self-published book for 11 years. So you couldn't buy it in stores. And I've met with, you know, probably 15 New York publishers since then. And looking for like, who's the right, you know, partner, publisher to bring this to the masses that buy their books at Target or Walmart or Barnes and mm-hmm. Noble. And so that was part of doing an updated and expanded edition, was let's make the book better, even better. And let's reach, you know, the way I always say it is 2 million copies sold, which means there's 8 billion people that I have to spend my life trying mm-hmm. to reach and impact with the message. So.
Do you ever wake up in the morning and just say, I've only reached 2 million out of 8 billion. I'm a failure.
Yeah. ever like this? Of course, that's human nature, right? You always look at I call that gap focus in the book. But yeah, it's human nature to look at what you didn't get done.
So. I've written 8 books. I've really only sold about 1 million copies. So I'm feeling really inferior right now.
Yeah. No, that's a little embarrassing.
Yeah. So like your author flex game is stronger than mine.
There you go. Well, you've sold way more coffee.
Fair point. Speaking of flexes, I interviewed Brian Johnson recently, the guy who's kind of running through the I spent $2 million to reverse my age playbook, one that I'm familiar with and that I appreciate. And so we kind of compared who could swallow the most pills at one time. And he looked at me and he's like, dude, that's a weird flex, but kind of like respect. And I just laughed.
Wait, didn't you get my voice text about that?
You voice texted me about that?
Dude, I sent you a voice text like 3 days ago and I said, Dave, what about when I see you, you and I have a contest to see who can swallow the most pills? Because I think that I can give you a run for your money. I don't know if I can beat you. Because that morning I swallowed 22 pills, no problem, one gulp. And I was like, and that's why I literally, right when I did that, I thought of you.
Let's have a contest.
Dude.
Here's a problem though. See the number of unread messages from Ambox?
I only have 380, so you're crushing me by
1432 unread messages in my inbox. And I will say, for my friends who send me voice notes, you can't listen to a voice note when you're on a call or a video call. So the voice notes,
texts are actually better.
I should listen to that.
Yeah.
And then 5 days later, I still haven't listened to it because when am I going to do that?
Yeah. It's the question is, who's lazier, the person sending the message that doesn't have the energy to type it or the person on the receiving end that doesn't have the energy to listen to a voice text, right? So.
You know what I used to do?
Conundrum.
I had a couple of people who would abuse voice text. It's one thing if you send someone voice text because it's like, I want you to hear my voice because I really care about you, man. Another thing when they're just like, blah, 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 blah. So I would just go, you know, it wasn't really clear. Could you record that again? And I would send them a voice text and I would do five times and they get frustrated.
That's great. Well, the thing is, when you say abuse voice text, where my mind went was a 1 minute voice text, got it. 3 minutes. 5 minutes? Come on. And, you know, and then especially with details, right? They're like, oh, there's 7 things I need to make sure that are really important that I get to. You're like, by the end of the voice text, you're like, I forgot what the last 7 were. Yeah.
And I might do that when I'm working with my team or something because I'm driving somewhere, but I also pay them to transcribe it and turn them into action items.
There you go.
And I'm kind of expensive to listen and transcribe unless there's emotional content. So in the Miracle Morning perspective.
Yeah.
When should you start listening to voice texts?
After Miracle Morning.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can incorporate them somehow.
Yeah. Play on your phone after you've done your Miracle Morning is ideal. Unless you're using the Miracle Morning app, to be fair.
Okay.
So it's funny. So we have a Miracle Morning app that, you know, people love, but I don't use it because I don't like apps for during my Miracle Morning. So it's this really weird conundrum to be like, hey, other people like it. I actually don't use it.
So we can have this big social, why Hal Elrod doesn't use his own app. This is going to be great. Oh, you got that, Joey?
We're terrible. Gonna terrible.
Blow it up. We'll have an affiliate link to that. I don't even have an affiliate thing. I'm just teasing.
Yeah.
But we'll totally blow it up. Like the app that Hal Elrod won't use.
Jeez, this is being recorded. This is my app developer, head of app development, is going to hate that I said that.
You know what though? It's the same thing. I make a lot of tools for people that I don't need to use because I'm the one who made the tools. I already know all this stuff.
There you go.
So sometimes it's worth having it because my job is to make it so anyone listening or anyone following myself doesn't have to think. You just know what to do. You don't have to know mitochondrial biology, right? Because I spend all this time. You spend all this time honing your techniques. So if someone would wake up, I turn on the app, I don't have to think about it. And I just did what it told me to do and I got the results.
Yeah.
Winning, but you don't need it. You're the pro.
And that's it. I think that could be for anybody, right? So if you're new to the Miracle Morning, right, the app's like, oh, this makes it so much easier. It holds me accountable. It facilitates Miracle Morning. But maybe 15 years later, like me and thousands of Miracle Mornings, you're like, oh, I don't need it anymore. You know?
Yeah. Do you feel weird with people being accountable to an app?
That's a good point, right? Little AI futuristic dystopian question there, yeah. Right? Or consideration. Yeah. No. No, I will say actually that is the one thing that I do use apps for is actually, and that was the initial Miracle Morning app, was tracking the savers, the six practices, just checking them off and every day making sure you're accountable. That is actually one thing that I will use it for. And I use another app called, I can't think the name, but it's where I've got like any habit that I want to either quit or begin. Mm-hmm. And every day I've got like six habits. And so I'll be like, okay, I checked that off, like not drinking alcohol right now. And that way I can track, right? Because it's really easy to go, I don't feel like I've been drinking that much, right? Mm. But you don't really know. But now it's like there's a red mark or a green mark if I did or didn't do the thing.
Oh, I've seen that app. I tried it
way of life. Yeah, yeah.
I tried it for like a day. And I put on there like, use the app. And the next day I didn't.
Yeah. So I actually like apps for accountability in that way, yeah.
Now, here's a hard question for you. Mm. This is totally not what I was trying to talk to you about. But
yeah, no, where are we going?
Yeah. You're fun to chat with stuff about. Just like see how you think about stuff. So do you know Manish Sethi from Pavlok?
No. I know Pavlok. I've heard of Pavlok.
Okay. Yeah. This must be like maybe eight or so years ago, early days of the show. He reaches out. He's this crazy ADHD guy. And he got to be somewhat famous because he hired someone on Craigslist to come to his house and slap him in the face every time he used Facebook. So I don't know if it was a dominatrix or just some random woman who's like, this is better than bartending. And she's like, just sit in his office and smack. Because he found he was like unconsciously going to reach for it. And he said, this is amazing. So he ended up starting this watch. And I did invest like a very tiny amount of money. So guys, I'm not trying to sell this.
Yeah,
I haven't talked to Manish in a while. But it's a watch that shocks you every time you don't go to the gym or every time you have a craving for tobacco or whatever.
Yeah.
And he found like massive results from negative reinforcement, especially for addiction and for breaking habits.
Yeah.
It was one of those things that I wouldn't have thought had efficacy, but we all focus on positive motivations, like affirmations, like all the good stuff. But what is the role, especially in an accountability partner? I mean, isn't an accountability partner just really about shame?
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
I mean, like, oh, you said you didn't do it? Bad boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, isn't that kind of...
I think it's both. I mean, like, you know, I know for me, and I think it was Tony Robbins that said, and I'm sure he didn't invent this, right? But just the idea that we will do far more to avoid pain than to gain pleasure, right? And so I utilize that a lot in my affirmations. Sometimes I'll be like, you know, here's the consequence of not doing this and getting really present to that. You're like, mm-hmm. I don't want that to come true. Like the benefit is this, like, okay, but if that benefit isn't so compelling, right, that you're like, well, if I don't do it, I'm still okay. Versus if I don't do it, oh, here's how this will compound into negative consequences that are, man, I'm not willing to accept that future. So I've got to take action now.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Well, that seems like a fear-based thing because it's like you're forecasting the future. What was interesting about this other approach is that it's real-time pain. Mm. It's not like, oh, you know, I might lose my house 5 years from now if I don't show up to work on time today.
Because Like, it's literally shocking you in the moment.
Yeah. And like, let's face it, increasing penalties for crimes has never worked in studies because no one thinks they'll get caught. So future pain that isn't guaranteed versus the public, it's like it shocks you if you don't go to the gym and it's like an immediate thing or if you do whatever.
Yeah.
So I had me thinking about the whole accountability thing, which works really well. So you need accountability to your miracle morning and you could like have someone you do it with, like a partner, or you have the app you're accountable to. But what if we wired the app in? So if you didn't do Miracle Morning, it shocked you.
Shocked you?
Would it work better?
Yeah, maybe we partner with Pavlok, and I think there's some opportunity there.
The other Pavlok story, which I'll get off them in a second because it just randomly came up. Manish got on Shark Tank, and actually got an offer from Mr. Wonderful. And he looks right at him and goes, oh, I would take money from any shark except for you.
No way.
He totally trash talked Mr. Wonderful.
No way.
And I don't know if this was because of ADHD or just because...
Tourette syndrome.
Yeah, or maybe he's just really good at marketing because that clip... Because Mr. Wonderful was like, F you, get off the stage. And like really... So of course, that got tens of millions of views.
No way.
So either it was like the most masterful PR move or just like a brain that was like... Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah.
So Manish, if you're listening...
What's interesting about it, if it was a masterful PR move, the beauty of it is he gave away no equity and sold more of his product. Like genius.
It was either genius or crazy.
So in other words, you need advice from him on how to be more polarizing because yours was a little bit softer in the beginning. And he can give you some tips.
So listeners, if you would, when you see this on Instagram or TikTok or wherever I put it, if you could tell me what to be more polarizing about, I would appreciate that because, you know, I've really worked on this and I'm mostly just so peaceful. I just like to play with vegans because I was one.
I'm doing
it as an act of service, but it's not like mean. I don't want to be like negatively polarizing. I just want to be like playfully polarizing.
Yeah.
Right.
So, I used to be a vegan too.
Me too, man.
Yeah, for like, many years.
What happened after you were a vegan?
Honestly, I read an article. I forgot. I don't know if his buddy sent it to me or what, but about B12 and how it's almost impossible to get vitamin B12 in a vegan diet. Mm-hmm. It's like nutritional yeast. There's like two things, right? And that was immediate for me. I looked toward nature for the answers, and I went, "Oh, how can this be the quote unquote proper, correct, ideal diet that nature or God intended?" If it's missing a vital nutrient. And then I'm like, where's your B12? It's like, oh, animal meat. Okay. And then I went back.
Wow. So you were just very rational about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was devout, man. I had like juicers and sprouters and all that. And I was hungry all the time. I got cold all the time. My Hashimoto's got worse. A lot of other aches and pains from oxalic acid building up in my tissues. And finally, I started cracking teeth from mineral deficiencies. Literally, I had two of them shatter.
Wow.
And like, maybe this isn't working.
Yeah.
But even then, I think I would have hung on to it, but I went to Tibet. I'm like, I'm not eating like raw yak meat in the middle of nowhere that's been hanging on a post blowing in the wind. Ugh. Like, that's just not, I think I'll cook it first.
Yeah.
So I felt better.
What's interesting is I'm actually organic vegan by day and paleo by night. Like, that's the best way I could categorize it.
Interesting.
Meaning, so I start the day with a raw vegan smoothie. Right. And it's got organic walnuts, organic Brazil nuts for selenium, you know, organic, what are the little tiny, chia also, hemp seeds. So chia seeds, hemp seeds. So it's got a lot of, you know, protein and good fats. And then some, you know, a few berries and such. And then for lunch, I have an organic vegan salad.
Okay.
And then for dinner, I have whatever my wife makes, which last night was like beef tips and, you know, potatoes. And
interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So to me, I have more energy throughout the day. So that raw vegan, you know, lots of enzymes, lots of, you know, getting the energy from the food. I still subscribe to that I learned at a Tony Robbins event in 2000. You know,
you guys were talking about Tony on the vegan diet.
I know. He went off.
It made him really sick. So he started eating a lot of fish. But
and then that made him sicker.
He didn't do the research. And like swordfish is the most polluted.
Mercury.
So, I think he's back to eating normal foods now.
Yeah. I feel the best when I, like the other day, what did I have for lunch? I ate, because it was a holiday. And so I had some solid food, some heavy cooked food for lunch. Mm-hmm. And I was like food coma. So I find that when I eat raw vegan, I have more energy, but then I want the nutrients from the meat. So that I save for the evening. And then I kind of tire out on the couch. Yeah.
I tried eating some raw vegans recently, but it turns out beef sashimi is not that nice. So I decided to cook my vegans.
That's smart. Yeah.
Okay. Except cows eat cow's milk, right? So here's a question. Is human milk vegan?
Oh. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I will say cow's milk is something that I that like I often, that's where I could get polarizing, which is I'm like, that's for baby calves. That's the only animal that milk was designed for, you know? And I always, who was it? There was a stand-up comedian that goes, I bet the first guy that tried cow's milk did a lot of other weird shit before that.
That's classic, right? It's funny because just on a pound for pound basis, it's like one of our most affordable sources of protein. Mm. It's just that we've done bad things to cows so that the protein is the wrong form for us.
Yeah.
And if you go back to the A2 raw grass-fed stuff, I think there's an argument that if you're not allergic, it's probably good for you just because you need that kind of fat and you need that much protein. But it's such a problem for people because of allergies. So I do sheep's milk and I don't mind that because having run a small farm, I had a 32-acre farm.
Oh, that's right. I forgot
And we raise cows and pigs and sheep and chickens.
Nice.
Right. And I will tell you, pigs are very happy for all the milk they can get.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They love it.
Anything that's fat. Chickens too.
Oh, yeah.
They will literally like fight each other for any piece of meat or dairy. And you give them like the corn and all that. And they're like, oh, gross, vegan. Like, they just want the meat. They just can't get enough of it.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that I saw a post from you or back when you were doing like Instagram or showing you doing that. You're like, hey, I'm feeding the chickens a bunch of meat. This is what they're like.
Yeah.
So we have 25 chickens and we have 2 sheep, 4 milk.
Love it.
But we're about to get them pregnant from one of Tucker's sheep. So they haven't produced milk yet. So for the last year or two, they're not old enough.
Right.
And so, but I think this spring is when my wife's going to impregnate them and we're going to start having sheep's milk. So I'll bring you.
What flavor of sheep are they?
They're an African breed.
Oh, neat.
One looks like a deer. One looks like a goat.
Wow.
And so we either I've joked, I'm like, either we were just lied to and told, oh, yeah, no, they're sheep. They're this African breed. You can't even find them online.
They're antelopes.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they're goats, but we were told they were sheep. We bought them as sheep. So. Yeah.
Wow. We had baby doll sheep. That was our favorite. Or Shropshire and baby doll. Baby dolls think they're dogs. They're just so nice.
Oh, yeah.
Even the males only occasionally headbutt you. So they're just a little bit more manageable. Yeah. But yeah, man, bring me some sheep's milk. I'm all over that.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. I found sheep butter for the first time. It smells like feta, but it's butter. And I'm kind of liking that.
Nice. I haven't even had sheep's milk yet. I don't know if I've ever had it, but we'll.
I've never had just the milk. Just the yogurt and the cheese is all.
Oh, okay.
So it's one of those things where I think in the US, we're going to see a lot more people with sheep and goats. Mm. If you look back to like the 1930s when we had the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl and all that, largely caused by Rockefeller's interference with our society.
Yeah.
Screw you, Rockefeller. Anyway. When you look back at the history of that, like, wow, like one guy did a lot of evil.
Oh, yeah. But
when was happening in New York, there's pictures of every balcony has a little goat on it.
No way.
Because people are feeding all their scraps to the goat to get the milk from the goat.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Wild.
So this is one of those things where this is going to be, I think, a lean year. We just had a massive freeze. It's going to, there'll be less food for the animals. And some kind people, either big food companies or maybe some other country's intelligence agency has gone through and blown up our dairy, meat, and egg production across the country.
Dude, that's all a coincidence, you conspiracy theorists.
There's thousands and thousands of them that happened in order moving across the country.
Yeah.
Almost like a small group was moving around.
Yeah,
doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
odd
something. I can't tell you I know who's doing it. I can just tell you something's wrong. But that's why eggs are expensive. That's why meat's expensive. And they're trying to make meat like it's a very focused PR campaign.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll just tell you, what they haven't figured out is that big food company executives and politicians are made out of meat. And a sizable percentage of Americans will not eat crickets and soy. So if there's no cows to eat, they're going to
go for the executives. Is that what you're saying?
Just logic, right? You got to have some meat to live here. And so, you know, I wouldn't personally do that. I'm not advocating for whatever it was you were thinking of there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that's pretty dark there.
Dude, you implanted that in my mind. That was for sure some subliminal...
I'm
Dave Asprey, mind trickery.
I'm triggered right now.
Good.
All right.
Wait, what are we going to talk about? Miracle Morning?
I'm here to get you in trouble.
All right.
So you're kind of a pro at overcoming big stuff. And I mean, you and I both faced some things, but you faced some near-death things, both with a car accident when you were younger and then more recently with a pretty serious bout with cancer. So walk me through that just for listeners who haven't really heard the Hal story.
Yeah. So when I was 20 years old, I was driving home from giving a speech at a conference and hit head-on by a drunk driver at 80 miles an hour. My car spun off the drunk driver and the car behind me, not tailbone me, T-bone me, at 70 miles an hour. And the left side of my body was just crushed. I broke 11 bones instantaneously. My femur broke in 2 pieces. My pelvis broke in 3 places. My arm broke in half. My elbow shattered. My eye socket shattered. and I was found dead at the scene. I was clinically dead for approximately 6 minutes. Airlifted to a hospital. They revived me on the helicopter, brought back to life, flatlined twice more while I was in a coma for 6 days, and then came out of the coma, was told I would never walk again, and I had permanent brain damage. So that was my first bout with death, if you will. And then 7 years ago, when I was 37 years old, I was diagnosed with a rare aggressive form of cancer, acute lymphoblastic leukemia. And this was way more difficult because the doctors, I was given a 20 to 30% chance of surviving. But the difference was now I had kids. I had a 7-year-old daughter and a 4-year-old son. And to be told that there was a, you know, a 20 to 30% chance of living means there's a 70 to 80% chance that you're going to die. And when I went to the hospital, I found out I had cancer because my heart was failing, my lung was failing, and my kidneys were failing.
We talked like a week or two before you got diagnosed.
Yeah.
I think we rode to an airport together.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, man, like you were gray. I was like, something's wrong. And wow. I know, like you could just kind of feel like you were just barely putting one foot in front of the other. Yeah,
thanks for not saying anything, dude.
Well, no, I just thought you
could have saved me.
I thought you were tired. Yeah. I was like, man, this guy's like depleted.
I mean, it was a Joe Polish event. The odds are we didn't get a lot of sleep.
Yeah. You always, when you're with Joe Polish, there's so much excitement. It's not that you're out drinking late.
No,
it's just that you're out talking late, right?
Totally. Good people.
I've been a member for like 10 years. So I remember the change in your energy because you're a real high energy guy.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, you know, must be like life stress. But if you could go back now and kind of look at it with the wisdom, when was the first time that you knew something was wrong with the cancer?
I did not. Well, so I woke up one morning, like 2 a.m. and just struggling to breathe. And, you know, my wife woke up hearing me wheeze and she goes, what's wrong? I said, I can't breathe. And she sits me up, all these pillows behind my back. And the next day I went into the ER and urgent care. And they misdiagnosed me. They saw the mass on my lung and they went, it looks like, I mean, literally the doctor's tone was, it looks like you have pneumonia, but if you don't get better in a few days, go get a second opinion. He was very unsure. And they gave me a Z-pack of antibiotics. And every day I was breathing less and less and less. And I spent the next week and a half in the ER. Every other day, my lung was drained of about 1.5 liters of fluid. And then it would fill back up, drain it again, fill back up, drain it again. And no one knew it was wrong. So now they sent me to this other hospital in Austin, St. David's. And they tested me and they said, you have, it looks like you have cancer, but we want you to get a second opinion. Go to MD Anderson Cancer Hospital. Mm-hmm. And so I went, and then that's when the doctor said, you've got a 20 to 30% survival rate. Mm-hmm. If you don't start, you're going to die in the next week or two if you don't start chemo.
Dude, that is the best marketing ever, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is I thought he was, so I was like, I don't trust what you're saying.
Good for you.
So I said, let me go do my own. Because imagine this, Dave. So here's what he's telling me. You have two choices. Don't do chemo and you're going to die in a week or two. Do chemo and there's only a 20 to 30% chance that you're going to live. Yeah. You know, it'd be like going to a financial advisor that's like, hey, give me all your money and trust me with your life savings and I'm only going to lose it 80% of the time.
It's an industry.
Yeah. And so I went home and I Googled best holistic oncologists in the country and I called a couple of them and they both said, chemo is your best bet. This cancer that you have is so aggressive and fast acting. Your organs are already failing. Your doctor was not actually lying to you that you're going to die in a week or two. Nothing we can do. So I'm like, well, if the best holistic oncologist in the country can't help me, damn it, what am I going to do?
We did the right thing. Yeah. And that's something for listeners. Guys, there is no moral judgment on pharmaceutical, chemo, radiation, cancer, or even highly processed food. The only thing that matters is where are you now? What's your goal? And what are the tools? And what are the risks and rewards? And there's a sizable number of cancers where, for that kind of cancer, all the things we have say chemo really works. And maybe you should also stack it with acupuncture and affirmations.
And that's what I did. I did every holistic practice known to man in conjunction. Coffee enemas 3 days a week. I took 70 supplements a day. Lymphatic massage, acupuncture, ozone sauna, you name it. And I think that's the biggest message, by the way, for anybody listening. Do not trust a doctor with your life because you're a number. They have very little skin in the game. They lose patients, big deal. No one's going to take responsibility for your life other than you. And that's the mindset.
I don't know, man. The doctors I know, they feel it when they lose someone.
Yeah.
It also depends if they're your regular doctor or you're just coming in for a specialist thing.
Sure.
But no doctor likes to lose people, but you're right. They don't have the same skin in the game and they're trained to tolerate that.
And on my second visit, when I went back to the doctor, I'm like, okay, I'll do chemo. I asked the oncologist, I said, hey, just, this was my test for him. I said, what part does diet play in my recovery? And he said, it doesn't matter as long as you do the chemo.
That's,
and I'm like, how can I trust?
Stupid.
Right? And so, and I was so angry, not for me, but when I would go to the cafeteria and see his other patients dragging their IV chemo towel around, eating pizza and ice cream and cake and soda, and just so angry with the system that we're, right? I'm like, I can't change it, but I'm like, man, you're telling, that person doesn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I actually felt a sense of responsibility that I owe it to the world to beat this cancer so that I can help other people on their healing journey that might not be blessed with the knowledge and the resources that I've been fortunate because I listen to Dave Asprey and read his books to come across.
There's very good evidence that most cancer is highly sensitive to insulin and glucose.
Yeah.
Right. So if you know what kind of cancer you have,
yeah,
then maybe controlling sugar intake would be really useful.
Yeah.
Right. And for a doctor to say, we don't know, there's this weird mindset. I once asked a doctor, I don't remember what medical procedures a while ago, go, hey, like I'm taking whatever vitamin C or zinc or something. Do you think there's any reason that I should, you know, pay attention to that?
Yeah.
He goes, oh, no, don't take it. I go, why? He goes, well, there's no studies of that. And I looked at him, I said, there's no studies of lotion with that. And you're saying I could use lotion, right? And he just stops and looks at me and goes, that's a good point. He goes, I really don't see any reason you couldn't do that. I go, thanks. That's the opinion I wanted.
Yeah.
But the default to never giving an opinion without a study,
yeah,
is handing your balls to big pharma.
Yep.
So I know that there's tens of thousands of functional and even non-functional doctors, just Western doctors who listen to the show, sometimes they hate on me, but quite often just because I think differently because I'm a computer hacker, right?
Yeah.
And guys, you know, you're medical professionals, I'm not. So I have a lot of respect. Like if my bone's broken, I don't know. I don't have any idea. I don't know physiology.
Yeah.
I know mitochondrial biology. So I look at that stuff and they're listening to this. Yes, you have to take into that stuff that you're probably not trained in. And if you do it, then you say, well, I'm unaware of any evidence, but given what we know mechanistically, here's what I think is the best bet.
Yeah.
And what that leads to is, well, it's okay to move forward, make a decision, and be wrong.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right, and partly because of insurance and because of attorneys, it's like the status quo, which is shitty, is the safest alternative for them, but the worst alternative for you and me.
Sure.
And I think in functional medicine, people think a little bit differently, and then it's always a struggle with insurance companies.
Yeah.
But I got to ask you something. Since you've been through this whole process twice now, I was just reflecting with a friend recently. An absurd number of my friends have died and come back or been struck by lightning. Like okay. An absurd number. So maybe you guys don't want to be my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
Although it usually happens before I know them.
Okay.
So when you died, do you think you woke up with superpowers or with a different awareness of things? Like, did you get downloaded with alien malware or anything like that? I don't know.
No, interesting. Well, I mean, I do feel, you know, I've done, whether it's through deep meditations or plant medicine sessions where really feeling connected to God, to source, mm-hmm. and getting the message that you're on a very specific journey and I've put you through these things while giving you every resource you needed to be able to overcome them so you can keep paying it forward and helping other people. So I've gotten that in every fiber of my being. And so if there's any superpower, I think we all have a superpower. For me, it's been being able to get through these adversities in a way where I extract as much value to then share it with others.
So you're a highly resilient person. It's interesting. I interviewed Kimball Musk, like in his kitchen, you know, cooking steaks. And I made a joke about DMT sauce. DMT is the active ingredient in ayahuasca. It's a hallucinogen for the steaks. And he started laughing. We kind of talked about it. And he said, oh yeah, I've done DMT. He said, but I didn't really need to, because he also had a near-death experience. He broke his neck and was unconscious for 3 days, almost died when he was, I think, 36. And so he said, during that time, I met God.
Mm.
So with he was on DMT, he's like, been here, done that.
Yeah.
Did you have that kind of experience with either one of these?
Because of my the brain damage I suffered from the head-on collision, right? So my frontal orbital lobe was completely smashed in the front of my skull at 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour. So I have no memory of the time that I was dead, nor 2 weeks after. I have very little memory yesterday. I mean, the brain damage I suffered from that. So yeah, so I have no recollection. For me, it's just more of an internal knowing, which in some ways is more powerful than like, I saw a light versus like, I have this, to me, this inner, just conviction that I'm supposed to help as many people as I can.
Mm-hmm. Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount. For 25 years, I've had a strong passion for understanding the science behind why we age and what we can do about it. One of the most groundbreaking discoveries in the last two decades is senolytics. Senolytics are plant-derived or pharmaceutical ingredients that can help your body drop old, worn-out cells. Scientists call them senescent cells, and in my books, I call them zombie cells. As you age, those senescent cells build up in your body. They live for a long time, and they eat up your energy. There is a hack for this. It's called Qualia Senolytic. Your podcast sponsor, Neurohacker Collective, created Qualia Senolytic. It eliminates those zombie cells and has a clinical study that supports its effectiveness. I really felt a difference in how my body moved after just a couple months on Qualia Senolytic. It's upped my energy level even more, and my joints feel really good. If you're over 30 and you want to use a clinically tested formula to help you feel younger, try Qualia Senolytic. To get younger now, visit neurohacker.com/Dave and try it risk-free for up to 100 days. Use code DAVE at checkout to get 15%. That's neurohacker.com/Dave. Use code DAVE.
This is a question. Man, I have all this cool stuff based on your book. We're going to get some of the stuff. But I got to ask you all the hard questions. So I've had a chance at 40 years of Zen, my neurofeedback company. It's in part like a digital mystery school, you could say. Like a recent person came out, like, it's like the best plant medicine ceremony I ever had, but without the plants. Because you kind of trip on things like this. And when I'm working with these like high level spiritual guru type of people, a lot of them say what you just said. They say, like, I want to help everyone. But most of them, when you get right down to it, and they're, you know, being vulnerable, because when you do the ego work, you become vulnerable. Mm-hmm. They're exhausted. Because like they'll walk into a room and like, okay, I have to help everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
And they get caregiver fatigue, but on the scope, on the range, the scale of millions of people.
Yeah.
And as I kind of work on it, I've certainly just like, I'm going to help everyone who wants help. But there's a difference between helping everyone and everyone who wants help. Or checking in with your guidance or higher power or masters, whatever lineage you're with, and saying, am I supposed to help this person? Like maybe that person chose suffering and they haven't got the
message.
Got
their own journey, sure.
And if I flip the switch for them, they're not going to get the message.
Yeah.
So I've kind of modulated my thing. So even when, you know, Tony Robbins is like, I'm going to feed a billion people. Like, well, what if the billion people don't want to eat or they don't want to eat what you're feeding them?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's some sort of energetic difference between I'm going to do X for a billion people and I'm going to do X for the people who would benefit or the people who want it. Do you have a differentiation in your mind about that?
Yeah, I think that for me, you know, like the way that I go about the Miracle Morning is I just do podcasts like this. I give speeches. I just am sharing it. And so to me, the people, the people that are attracted to it are going to do it. And the people that, right? So yeah, so there's no one that I'm like, I need to convince this person. You need it. It's like, look, either you resonate with the message or not. And I'm very aware of like, you know, so my message, or like I'll say that I have 8 billion people to share with the Miracle Morning. I'm not delusional to think that I'm going to convince everybody to do the Miracle Morning. In fact, I probably won't even reach 8 billion people. Like realistically, I don't know. But right. To me, it's just an intention of like, how are you living your life? How are you showing up? And for me, I'm going to show up every day at my best. I'm going to, at my relative best. I'm going to try to be at my best. Miracle Mornings would help me do that every morning, right? Start the day in a peak state. And then I'm going to help as many people as I can that day. And I will tell you this, cancer was a mindset shift for me. Mm-hmm. Back then, I was much more like, I have to help everyone. And I valued quantity over quality at that time. And what happened is I realized, oh, I'm a workaholic. Mm-hmm. I say that family's my number one priority. I've got two kids and a wife at home. But gee, I sure do give up a lot of weekends if they're my highest priority because I got more people to help. And at that time, I really thought, I've got to help all these people. I'm doing this work, God's work, right? And now it's like, I realize I will never impact people at the level that I can help my daughter, my son, and my wife. And so I give up a lot of opportunity now to impact the masses to spend time with my family.
You got to put it on the calendar and value it.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of a time years ago when I was on a panel at Google at their headquarters. And it was with the guy who made What the Health. This kind of like dark energy propagandist guy. And someone in the back of the room stood up and says, I want to be a vegan food activist. Like, do you guys have some advice for me? And I thought about it. And I said, shut up and eat. And people started clapping, right? And he said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, here's the deal. You don't have a right to be an activist because that would just make you a bully.
Mm.
What you do have a right to do is to take action that you believe is right, demonstrate that it works so well that people ask you, people seek you out.
Yeah.
Then you've earned the right to be a leader, but you can't be an activist because then you're just a bully and you sound like Greta Grundleberg.
Like,
hey, shame on you. I don't have any solutions, but I'm skipping school on Friday, but now I'm 20 so people can pick on me and not say I'm a high school girl. Dude, Greta, build some shit that changes things. Stop whining.
Yeah.
But that's the vegan activist mindset.
Got it.
By the way, in the Enneagram, the activist is like my kryptonite. So guys, fix it. Don't talk about it. All right. And what it all comes down to though is this is about removing the judgment and the sense of morality about helping five people versus helping 50 million people. They're exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
As long as you're helping the people that you can help, who desire help, that's it. There's zero difference between the two.
Yeah.
And any difference that you feel is just ego.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
Yeah. Yes and no. No, let me push back a little bit. And I might not be pushing back, so I don't even know what I'm going to say here. Let me try. So when I wrote The Miracle Morning, it was out of a sense of responsibility that this morning routine changed my life in a profound way. And then I started teaching it to people like my coaching clients and people that I knew. And they're like, I'm not a morning person. And they'd come back a week later to our call and go, oh my gosh, this works. So that's where I go, okay, wait, if this changed my life and their life and we weren't morning people, like this could help anyone. So I have a responsibility to share this with other people. So I wrote and self-published the first book. But when I did so, I didn't have an audience. So I wasn't thinking, you know, I'm like, yes, this could change the world, but I'm not going to reach the world. Like I just want to help. If I help one, it's the whole of that mentality, one person. Right. But what happened is when the book came out and then I'm getting dozens and then hundreds and then thousands of emails and reviews like, this saved my marriage. This got me off my meds. This fit, right? Then I'm like, oh, I really got a mindset of like, it is selfish of me. That's how I felt. And I don't know if I still feel that way, but I think that I do. It's selfish of me to not do everything in my power to at least introduce this to as many people as possible because it can really help. So thoughts on that?
I think that as many people as possible is the nuance because as many as possible or as many as are available. And if as are available versus is equal to the same as possible, then
I think it does. It's like as many as I can get in front of and reach and talk to.
I know that when I started the blog that became Bulletproof, I already had a full-time VP job at a big tech company in the computer security industry. I had two young kids. Like starting a company is kind of dumb. And I wasn't starting a company. I just said, look, I've spent 20 years gathering this knowledge. I spent $2 million, at the time $1 million, on reversing all this negative stuff that happened to me with my health. And like I'm healthier, happier, more successful. Like things are better than they ever have been. I'm like a leader in longevity and nootropics and it's just my hobby.
Yeah.
So I'm going to write this and five people are going to read the blog. Yeah. That was my goal.
Yeah.
And if they avoid the $1 million and just the suffering that I went through when I was a teenager and a young man and someone who's 19 reads it and it changes their life, I'm all in just for like five people.
That's
was
it.
My goal.
Yeah.
And it grew to a lot more than that, you know, and became a $100 million a year company. But it wasn't the goal when I started. It was just five people. And along the way, like some things stood out. Maybe one of the most meaningful was, this is maybe just 2 years after I started it. I think it was to here in Austin at an event. And this guy walks up and goes, Dave, you know, we have a gift for you. And it was a bag. It had like a couple of frozen ribeyes and a stick of butter and a card. And the card was signed by all of his family. And he said, you know, we found your stuff 90 days ago. And, you know, here's a picture of us then. And here's a picture of us now. And you couldn't even recognize them. Like they'd all lost huge amounts of weight.
Wow.
But the one that stood out was a 16-year-old girl. And she was like really fat. Hmm. Right? And I was pretty heavy in high school. And certainly at the beginnings of college. So she's just heavy and, you know, bad skin and all that stuff. And then the picture from 9 days later is beautiful skin, healthy, healthy shape, just like vibrant. And I'm like, damn, I wish someone had done that for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, I almost cried myself. I was like, man, like this is just so profound. And the act of helping a person to your nervous system and to your spirit, I think it's the same as helping a million people.
I think we're built to do that. Yeah. That's what we're built to do. Yeah. Humans are built to serve each other, help each other, support each other, connect with each other, love each other. That's it.
How does that incorporate in your Miracle Morning practice?
So when I started the Miracle Morning, I'd say it was a selfish pursuit. And I don't put any negativity toward that word, right? But meaning it was 2008, the U.S. economy had crashed. I crashed with it. I lost my house, foreclosed on by the bank. I'm in physically terrible shape, living on credit cards. I'm really low point.
Yeah.
And so I was just looking for a solution to get out of debt and turn my life around. And the Miracle Morning, it wasn't called the Miracle Morning. It was my morning practice. And after 2 months, I doubled my income at the height of the Great Recession. And I remember the moment I ran to tell my wife, I signed on a second coaching client for the day. I said, sweetie, I signed on 2 more coaching clients today. She goes, congratulations. I go, no, you don't understand. Tipping point. We just doubled our income in the last 2 months from this. It's all because of this morning routine. It's the practice I'm doing in the morning. I go, it feels like a miracle. And without skipping a beat, she goes, it's your miracle morning. Wow. And I go, I like that, miracle morning. But again, not a book idea. I just wrote down miracle morning every day. That was my thing, my miracle morning. I started teaching it to coaching clients, right? So the point is, it started out with me. Like, I need to change my life. But now I do the Miracle Morning in service of others. So for me, the Miracle Morning helps me be the husband that my wife deserves and the dad that my kids deserve, because I focus on optimizing myself in the morning.
Yep.
And then I can show up my best. And of course, yes, selfishly, I want to be happy and I want to be healthy and I want to be financially secure and all of those things. That doesn't go away. But also, it's like anything. Once your needs are taken care of, right, then you feel like, oh, I'm liberated. Who do I want to help today? Because like you said, that's where I actually feel the most lit up and fulfilled, is when I'm helping someone else. And so that for me is how do I take care of myself first in the morning, now that I can go out and be the husband and the father and the leader that the people that I serve need.
So now you're talking about some kind of masculine and feminine roles even here. Yeah, like Shai was the husband, the father that I need to be. Most guys, including me, have been socialized, you know, put everyone else first. Like, you don't take care of yourself first. You take care of your family first. And a big part of my belief is, you know, creating that state of high performance and resilience. It comes from taking care of your own needs, because then you have 10 times more energy to take care of your community, your family, and all those things.
Yeah.
And I've been doing a lot of work. It might end up being a book one of these days. A lot of work just with local friends here in Austin, especially some like younger guys, you know, 20s and 30s, who are stepping into like the phase of building a family and building a career and all that. And it's interesting to see the shifts and the differences over time. And, you know, what does it mean to be a quote man? What's your take on that?
What's it mean to be a quote man?
Yeah.
It's a great question. And I don't know that I have a top of the mind answer, but if I give it a little bit of thought, to me, it's doing what's right. If I were to simplify it, I think one of the most valuable things I learned when I was 20, my mentor, I was in sales, and our division manager, he said, the secret to success is do what's right, not what's easy.
Yep.
And to me, what's right is what's ever in alignment with your values, your commitments, and the highest version of yourself, that you know intuitively what that is for you. And then what's easy is anything that's not in alignment with your values, your commitments, and the highest version of yourself. And so to me, that's being a man, but it could also be just being a woman, being the best version of yourself.
I was going to ask about that. So the difference between the masculine side of taking care of the family versus the feminine side of taking care of the family.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between men and women in the Miracle Morning practices?
Men and women are identically the same, Dave. Don't you know?
Women are small men. I forgot about that with those pesky boobs.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that is, it's to each their own, so to speak. But, you know, like in my household, we have some, you know, my wife takes care of the kids. And actually, I will say this. When I was coming up, when I was in, you know, my 20s, I was attracted to people like me, right? Like we all are.
Yeah.
And so I thought in a wife, I want a wife that's just like me. She's hard charging and she works a lot and she's really charismatic and productive and a top performer.
It's such a young person thing. I was like, I want a computer hacker wife.
Yeah, right.
Like, and then maybe not.
Once my wife and I started dating, what I realized is I want the same attribute, someone that is disciplined and that is focused and that is willing to go above and beyond to perform at a high level. But I realized, I want her to do that with our family and take care of our kids and our household. But my wife's the most productive. I mean, she processed 25 chickens the other day. Like my wife runs our ranch, dude. She wrapped all of our pipes for this winter freeze. She is incredible. But if she was out there selling books like me, right? And doing interviews, it's like, wait, but who's taking, so the nanny's taking care of the kids, right? And no judgment if that's the case, but like, I came to realize that it was the attributes that I valued, not the same, outcomes, right? So yeah, so for me, in our household, my wife's, and she just, it's just naturally, like last night, my daughter had a little heartbreak. And I'm like, my poor baby, I don't know what to do and I don't know what to say. And my wife knew what to do and she knew what to say. And she laid with my daughter in bed and, you know, my daughter went from crying to I'm listening through the door and they're laughing, cracking up. And that's a feminine energy that, you know, that my wife, that nurturing that I don't quite have.
I love that you're willing to talk about that. And, you know, I'm all in on the fact that men and women can do most of the same things.
Totally.
Other than pick up heavy stuff. Like, sorry, guys. Like,
my wife, by the way, actually can almost out. Dude, yeah. She is strong.
There are definitely women who can kick my ass. I'm not saying they're right. I'm just saying on average.
On average. Well, you just look at the world record in lifting for men and the world record in lifting for women. There's a difference.
There is now, but there's a couple of those Canadian powerlifting that just switched. They switched teams.
They identified.
So to speak.
Maybe
the women's scores are going up.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
We won't say whether that's valid or not. but I think everyone knows. So there's
careful with that common sense over there, Dave.
I live in Texas. So you're allowed to have common sense over here. But you know, I'm also, because I'm a biohacker, people are like, you know, they'll always tell you, like, in the same post, they'll accuse me of being a radical liberal and a radical conservative. And I'm like, guys, I support your right to have four balls if you want to, right? And you want to put a vagina on your forehead, like it's your body. You do anything you want to do and you have my full unreserved support.
Yeah.
Right? Just don't make other people do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a party for that other than one of this independent candidate who seems to support our individual freedoms this year.
Yes.
RFK.
Yes.
So he's spoken more sense than I've heard from anyone in politics in my entire life.
Yeah.
So.
And the sense that it comes from an authentic place, a heartfelt place. Yeah.
Following his principles.
Yep.
So I'm hopeful there. But the idea there, you know, that people can take offense or whatever. Dude, take offense. Like Joe Rogan tried to cancel me for 2 years straight. Right? Do you know about that?
No. Oh, I vaguely remember. Yeah.
It was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It was like he was selling a competing coffee and MCT oil. And the second he started doing that, he's like, Dave's a con artist, despite like, I don't know, 100 shows where he's just praising all my stuff.
Yeah.
And he deleted my episodes when I went to Spotify.
So crazy, dude.
So like, I went through all that stuff. So you're going to yell at me because I say something you don't like? Well, okay, here's the deal. The vegan diet doesn't work. Okay, you can yell at me for that. Right? You know, men and women are different. Yell at me for that. Right? And that said, I'd also say, men have the ability to turn on full feminine energy and still be men.
Mm-hmm.
And women have the ability to turn on full masculine energy. And like there's women who will pick a car up off their babies.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. You know, there's women who will kill you if you fuck with their family.
Yeah.
Right. So we can both do all that. Oh, that's cool. And I support your right to do whatever the heck you want to do.
Yeah.
But I'm also going to talk about it. Because in the context of Miracle Morning, I've been doing a lot of work on differences of fasting for men and women. There's a whole chapter in, in Fast This Way, my fasting book. It's all about the psychology of fasting, which is similar for men and women, but the fasting window for women is different. Mm-hmm. And women oftentimes need more sleep, or they need varying amounts of sleep based on where they are in their cycle. Right. So there's times when they have a bigger biological burden when they're in their fertile years.
Yeah.
Right. So leading up to their period, like, okay. So if you're going to need an extra hour of sleep for a week, right? Just because your body's working extra hard, just like if I lifted really heavy for a week, right?
Yeah.
So what does that do for Miracle Morning? Like wake up at 5 a.m.? Like, do you get to wake up at 6 a.m. if you're a woman, or if you're under more biological stress? Like, do you go to bed earlier? Do you wake up later?
It's a great point. I've never heard that question before. So I think about the Miracle Morning. So I watched an interview of the day, and I want to make sure, or not an interview, sorry. I watched a woman did a video book review of The 5 a.m. Club by Robin Sharma. And I love Robin. I learned a lot. In fact, when I was writing The Miracle Morning and I'm researching morning routines, Robin was like, I learned a ton from him, right? Cool. And then she had The Miracle Morning, like comparing the two books. And I was like, really curious. But one of the things she liked about Miracle Morning is how flexible it is. It's not at a set time. If you're a shift worker, your Miracle Morning might actually start at 1 p.m., right? If you have a newborn baby, your Miracle Morning might be in 10-minute increments during the first 10 minutes of your baby's nap, and then you go to bed with the baby. So you do one or two of the savers, the six practices of the Miracle Morning, right? And then you go take a nap with your baby, and then you wake, and then the next nap, right? So it's totally customizable. And so for me, it's like, you know, it's not waking up super early. It's just waking up maybe 30 minutes before you have to be up to get somewhere, so that rather than start your day in a reactive state, you're starting your day with intention, self-care, and proactively putting yourself in a peak state so you can show up better for the people you love, people that you lead, at work, et cetera.
I really like that. And that's one thing I like about your work too. So before I started the biohacking movement, before Bulletproof was a thing, I guess I had gone to Nepal and Tibet. I had yak butter tea and I was like perfecting the recipe that became Bulletproof coffee. And that I've since evolved even post-Bulletproof. And I'm sitting there going, I know that people who wake up early are morally superior to people who sleep in, because the early bird always gets the worm.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
So I woke up at 5 a.m. every day, no matter what. And for me, my bedtime since 10 years old has been 2 a.m. It's actually 2.04 a.m. or 2.02 a.m. somewhere in that window. Very, very consistently, that exact time is when I'm like tired and I just got to go to sleep. And I've written so many of my books and all in that window between 11 and 2, where everything's quiet and like the energies are quieter. You can just channel stuff then.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to wake up no matter what. And I did. I would wake up and I'd spend an hour. I would do chanting like Kriya. I would do breath work. I'd do Art of Living. I'd have my green tea before I had my coffee and, you know, burn crystals. Okay, didn't really do that. That was burning crystal meth, different time. I'm kidding. But like I did it really intensely for 2 years. And at the end of 2 years, I'm like, okay, I've taught myself that I can wake up at 5 a.m., but I'm less creative and I just don't like it. Mm. And later, as I learned circadian biology, I'm like, you know what? I'm more of a wolf, and I, with the stuff, and by the way, guys, sleepwithdave.com, best URL of my life. Mm. Totally free.
That's a great URL.
It's like, I'll teach you how to sleep. It's every tool, but I can go to bed at 10, 10:30 now. In the last 5, 6 years, I learned how to do this because of all the biohacking, and it feels natural and normal. But until then, man, I needed my Miracle Morning to be at 7 a.m. because otherwise I was going to be sleep deprived.
Sure.
So I sleep deprived myself for a couple of years trying to prove that this was possible. And it was possible, but it wasn't optimal.
Yeah.
And with Miracle Morning, even in our first interview, you're like, yeah, start it when you need to start it. And the flexibility there versus that early bird thing, that I think is a game changer, because there are people listening right now who aren't even shift workers. They're just like, you know what? I don't feel good if I wake up early.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, here's my question for you, Hal. Hmm. Is it true that the early bird works for the late bird?
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. I think that, I don't know.
I was just trying to.
Now I'm triggered. You finally got me triggered.
That's right. Yeah.
How dare you ask me such a question?
Walk listeners through SAVERS. This is your acronym for what you do during a Miracle Morning. And when you guys read the Miracle Morning book, the new expanded edition, you get all the notes for this, obviously, but just walk me through real quick.
And I will say, just for anybody that's like, I have the original Miracle Morning. The new edition has 70 pages of new content, including 25 new pages in the SAVERS section alone. Okay. And then it has a new chapter, The Miracle Evening, which is your strategy for blissful bedtime and better sleep. And then the last chapter, the new chapter, The Miracle Life, which is your path to inner freedom. So I just wanted to give a quick high level of what's new. And I rewrote almost every page of the book because if you go back and read your work from 10 years ago, it's embarrassing. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe I was a terrible writer. So I updated everything. But the SAVERS are, so these are six of the most timeless, proven personal development practices in the history of the world. Like, I didn't invent any of them. But I'll quote Robert Kiyosaki, or I'll paraphrase what he said when Robert had me on his show. He said, Hal, I've read The Miracle Morning three times, which that right there, my jaw kind of dropped, you know. One of my favorite authors, read my book three times, pretty cool.
That's amazing.
But he said, Hal, before you wrote The Miracle Morning and you created the SAVERS acronym, he said, every successful person on the planet attributes their success to at least one, if not two or three of the SAVERS. He said, but I've never met anyone or heard of anyone that did all six of these ancient best practices. He said, I think you named the book correctly, The Miracle Morning, because he said, any one of the SAVERS will change your life. But he goes, my experience has been in the last few months since I've been doing, all six will create miracles for you. And he's lost a ton of weight. It helps his marriage. I mean, you name it. Anyway, so that's the kind of beginning with the end in mind, like the holistic look at the SAVERS. It stands for silence, affirmations, visualization, exercise, reading, and scribing. So those are the six practices. And by the way, before my wife had the idea for the acronym, the S, silence, was meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And the S for scribing at the end was journaling. So it would have been MAVERJA, would have been the acronym. My wife said, why didn't you get a thesaurus and see if you can swap some of those words? But here's the point.
So you're saying that one of the feminine powers is being right?
Yeah, exactly. Every time. Yeah, almost every time. No, she's my muse, man. She gets it right. But those are the six practices, and you can do them in any order. There's a chapter in the book called The 6 Minute SAVERS. So literally, you can scale this. It could be a 60-minute practice. It could be a 6 minute practice. It could be a 30-minute practice, anywhere in between. To Robert Kiyosaki's point, any one of these will change your life when you stack all six of the most effective practices. You put yourself in a peak physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual state. You program your subconscious mind with the beliefs that you need to, you know, achieve whatever you want in your life. I mean, there's so many benefits. You improve your energy level through that morning exercise, et cetera, et cetera. We can dive in any aspect that you want.
So that's kind of your updated routine. What I thought was kind of cool is you also have a slumbers routine, which is the evening one. And it's got some biohacks in there. You've got, you know, stop eating 3 to 4 hours before bed, circadian biology, boom, love it. Let go of stressful thoughts, so kind of, you know, stress relief.
Yeah.
Natural sleep aids. What's your favorite natural sleep aid?
So I don't have a favorite. I stacked four of them. I take magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
I take valerian root.
That stuff smells so bad, but it works.
Yeah, in a capsule form, it's fine. And then I take a combination of CBD and CBN oil. It's a product by Cured Nutrition. It's called nighttime oil. And then I take the melatonin it's a grass. It's a natural melatonin.
Okay, cool. How much melatonin?
3 milligrams.
Okay, cool. So relatively, well, high based on biological creation, but low based on what some people are doing. So
yeah,
cool. And you talk about mapping out your next day. Now, I'm kind of torn about that because if you focus on all the stuff you're going to be doing the next day, like when you go to sleep, you might kind of be stressed about that. But I've also talked with a Navy SEAL or a combat, might have been a Special Forces guy. And he was working on sleep with people. And he found that for people with stress around going to sleep and recurring thoughts, writing it down works really well.
Yeah.
But if you don't have recurring thoughts, is like planning out the day ahead still a best practice for you?
So yes and no. Here's the way that I look at it. So yeah, if you've got like, if your mind is racing, oh, I got to do that tomorrow. Oh, wait, I got to remember that, right? Yeah. Then that's where you can't relax.
Right.
But
right.
If you write down everything you got to do tomorrow,
get it out.
Then you're like, I don't have to even think about it because I know it's written down. Mm. Now, here's my solution. I think I mentioned this in the book. I don't actually map out my next day every night. I map out my next day with a recurring calendar. So I never have, if it's not in my calendar, I have brain damage still from the car accident, the cancer. I don't remember it. I don't even, it has to be my calendar. So for me, mapping out my next day is actually just done throughout the day. I don't actually do it at night. But the idea is that if you don't have that, if you don't have everything in a digital calendar already figured out, you don't have to think about it at night, then actually getting the stuff out of your head and putting it on paper gives your subconscious permission to just relax.
There are studies showing that we way overrepresent our ability to remember things.
Oh yeah, totally.
So how many times, especially when I was younger, before I figured this out about myself, like all humans do, I'll just remember that.
Yeah.
And it just goes away.
Yeah.
And you don't even know that it went away because it went away.
Yeah. You don't remember that you forgot.
Right. It's so frustrating. Yeah. So I'm that way too. And maybe I also have brain damage. I did from toxic mold, but apparently it grew back on my Daniel Amen spec scans. But it's a fool's errand to hold your calendar in your head for the rest of the time because it's going to change.
Totally.
Or to have a to-do list. Because if it's not on the calendar, you're not going to do it.
Yeah.
If you're at all busy or if you have kids. So for me, I'm like, if it's not on the calendar, I don't do it.
Yeah.
So why do I need to think about tomorrow? I have an assistant who I work with all the time and she's playing Tetris on my calendar. So I know whatever I have tomorrow is the most effective thing I could do.
Totally.
And yeah, I have an assistant that helps. But even if I don't, anyone here can have a digital calendar and you don't have a to-do list.
Yeah.
You have a, when am I going to do it?
That's it. I don't have a to-do list. I have a to-do list just with a bunch of stuff that I eventually want to get done. But what I do is I schedule blocks of time. So I'm like, okay, what's my to-do list tomorrow? And I literally put it in at 8 a.m. I'm doing this from 8 to 8:30. Mm-hmm. 8:30 to 9 this, 9 to 9:15, 9:15 to 9:45, right? Like that's how my
you gotta map it out.
Yeah.
And people who do that are more effective. So, but you get it done before bed. Yeah. And boycotting blue light. So we are both so aligned. That's a massive biohack. People thought I was crazy when I started True Dark. And we have a study coming out soon in a neuroscience journal showing the specific tint and gradient lens that I created, that it changes your brain waves in 15 minutes as if you were doing advanced meditation.
Wow.
Which is super cool. So it's not just blocking blue, it's blocking four spectrums and angle and intensity. Hmm. So the True Dark glasses that are there for blocking blue, that was a big part of how I managed to move my circadian window.
Nice. And it's how I blocked out. You wear those 15 minutes before bed?
An hour is better if you're really trying to shift things.
Yeah.
But basically, you just don't want to have even 5 seconds of bright light when you're brushing your teeth. It'll jack you up.
Yeah.
So you wear those or you get better lighting indoors.
Yeah.
People come for dinner at my house and why are the lights all dim? I'm like, because the sun's starting to go down and we're eating and then they're going to stay dim.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you feel better.
Yeah.
Okay. So blue light is the thing there. Enter a blissful state with bedtime affirmations. Mm-hmm. How long are these affirmations?
They're relatively short. It probably takes 60 seconds to read them. And then I give them in the book. I give you my bedtime affirmations and you can print them out or you can just read the book or whatever. But for me, affirmations are, that's the A in savers, right? They're the most misunderstood, mistaught, and in my opinion, the most valuable of all forms of personal development. That's it's a bold statement. Mm-hmm. And the reason is with an affirmation, to me, you get to craft and articulate the perfect language, right? Which evolves. My affirmations are always changing as I'm changing and learning and growing and evolving. And I read something and I'm like, oh, that quote belongs in my affirmation around my wife because that reminds me of what I need to do to show up better for her. And so for me, affirmations, the reason there's a problem is we've been taught to either lie to ourselves. If you're struggling financially, just say, I am wealthy. I am wealthy, right? Or we're taught to use flowery passive language that produces a magical result. I'm a money magnet. Money flows to me effortlessly and in abundance, right? So for me, the way I teach affirmations in the book, affirm number one, what you're committed to. Number two, why it's a must for you. And number three, which actions you're going to take and when. That's my general affirmations formula, but that's only one of infinite formulas. The whole point of an affirmation is simply a reminder of something that you deem so important, you want to revisit it every single day until it becomes a part of your consciousness, a permanent fixture in your consciousness.
I love that. And when it gets in your consciousness, I think it percolates through into your cells.
Totally.
Your body becomes an antenna.
Totally.
For finding that. So you've got those in there. You've got read a book and then sleep like a baby to get quality sleep. There's something missing.
Mm.
And it seems like it's something that's important for nourishing people, keeping the species alive.
Starts with an S?
It starts with an F, the way I do it.
Dave, you're going to trigger somebody, dude.
Fertility.
Come on.
What were you you were thinking of that, the other F. How?
Fertility. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry,
this
man.
This is a PG-13 show.
I know.
Just messing with you. So Talk to me about miracle mornings, miracle evenings, and getting laid.
And getting laid. What is funny, who was it? Oh, no, it's actually, I won't say who, but it's somebody on my team. Her mother-in-law says, she read the Miracle Morning before my team member met her son and they got married, right? Mm-hmm. So she's already, wait, you work for the Miracle Morning guy? I love Miracle Morning. I do so Miracle good. Morning. She goes, and she told her the very first time they met and they were talking about it, she goes, my husband and I do the Miracle Morning, but the S in Savers, the final S is for sex. That's how we start every morning, how we end our Miracle Morning. And if you want to swap out S's, that's fine.
So you could do scribing. So maybe you could scribe some sort of like soft core, you know, that you just wrote out, like a little erotic story.
Well, silence. You could just be silent. Just do it in silence.
It usually doesn't work. Unless you have little kids next door, then it has to be silent. But it's kind of a humorous thing, but it's also like best time. Is it a morning or an evening thing? Because there's camps about that.
Dude, if you don't have small kids at home anymore, Dave, it's whenever you can. It's exactly. That's the time. Whenever you can. Yeah.
So I guess that even if you're tired, this is advice for people with young kids. And I have several friends who have really young kids now. You used to be like, let's wait for date night. It's like, no, you don't wait.
Yeah.
Because I promise you, kids have radar. Look, we'll wake up at 5 a.m. They're like, oh, they're awake? Let's wake up too.
Yeah, totally.
And it doesn't matter. Like, they chase your schedule around. So, yep. Like, you have 20 minutes, you go for it.
Yeah.
So that keeps marriages a lot stronger. That's for sure. Yeah. Okay. So, there isn't the best time in the miracle morning thing, as long as you get it done.
No.
Okay. I like that. And for listeners, I'm working on this, you know, this idea of biohacking. It's changing the environment around you and inside of you so you have full control of your own biology. Mm. And the so you can is open, but so you can show up the way you want to show up in your life, which is totally in alignment with what you're talking about here.
Yeah.
And I also believe, you know, I have this F word framework that our bodies follow, you know, fear, food, and then fertility, right?
Yeah.
And then friends. Right? Like we kind of prioritize our time automatically in our cells. All animals do that.
Yeah.
So given these things, we've got to schedule when we get our rest, because if you're exhausted, you're going to actually be in a state of fear and anxiety.
Yeah.
Right? How do we nourish ourselves properly? Which, you know, we talk about that. But then how do we nourish ourselves in our love life as a form of nourishment and spiritual practice, not as just, you know, getting laid? And it feels like society doesn't talk about that very much, but it's make or break for how you show up in the world as a man or as a woman or as a family or as, you know, whatever your arrangement is, that if that's lacking, it's almost like you have a diet that's not working right.
Yeah.
Right. And you can choose fasting, you can choose celibacy. That's fine, but it needs to be conscious. Right. And I'm working on helping followers use those energetics, which are more like Qigong or Tantra or more Eastern thinking, even some of the Ayurvedic practices, where you bring those into balance, and that lets you show up just 10 times more than you would have. But this is kind of missing from a lot of practices because it's, you know, titillating or embarrassing or whatever. And that's why if you go to the biohacking conference, but you know, it's in Dallas this year, you should come. Mm. End of May, like May 30th or 31st through June 1st.
Dude, I should like talk on morning routines or something.
You know, if you're up for that, Rebecca's going to kill me. I know our main stage is full, but let me see what I can do.
Yeah. That's
but I'd love to have you there, but it's just come, you know, be my guest. If you're interested, bring the family.
Yeah. All right.
You have to leave the chickens for a day. You'll have to figure that one out. It's 3 days. But anyway, you know, last year I brought in at least one or two speakers about intimacy. So I always look in a spiritual practice or a daily routine, like how do we bring intimacy in as another way of amplifying our energy throughout the day? And you're like, anytime if you got young kids,
yeah.
If you don't have kids, morning or evening is better, or you just don't have data on that?
I don't have data on that. Yeah, okay. I would be speaking out of my lane.
So Miracle Morning Bedroom Edition, just a suggestion.
Yeah, there you go. Miracle Morning for lovers. Right. There you go, Miracle Morning for, well, there's the Miracle Morning for couples, there's a book, but Miracle Morning for lovers.
Yeah, and your acronym is FU. No, right. It'll... I actually highly recommend that if that's in your scope of practice and knowledge, because my experience has been that working those energies into your affirmation practice, into your meditation practice, and just into your connection with the world, it really does deepen and enhance your ability to make stuff happen in the world.
Got it.
And this is kind of like you're saying, you know, you have a partner your wife, who does things that you don't do, like you kind of match and fulfill each other in that way.
Yeah.
People do that, whether they're in, you know, dedicated partnership or not. And I just feel like we haven't done enough work as a society on figuring out that part of human biology, psychology, and spirituality. So
yeah,
I'm down for hacking that.
All right.
I feel like we've gone pretty deep on the new Miracle Morning. Is there anything else that's new in the new edition of Miracle Morning that you really think is top of mind?
Yeah. I mean, I'll quickly... people, you know, why did you write the new book? And it was, well, it's 11 years since the book came out, 15 years since I started the practice. I would hope that by doing the Miracle Morning 6+ days a week, every week, that I've evolved a ton in what I do and how I do it. And so in the new book, it was making sure that it didn't lose the essence of the original, but also that it answered all the questions I've gotten over the last 11 years and what people have asked for and requested. And so, for example, meditation. I've developed what I don't know if I made it up, but I don't know where I would have learned it, but I call it emotional optimization meditation.
Okay.
And so as opposed to just clearing your mind and following your breath and sitting in silence, it's actually a very proactive meditation where you start the day and ask, what would be the optimal mental and emotional state for me to be in that would best serve me today? And it might be confidence if you've got some big presentation coming up. Mm. It might be playfulness if you're hanging out with your kids on Saturday morning. It might be love if you got in a fight with your spouse the night before and you need empathy in the morning, right?
Right.
Whatever it is, though, I teach you in the book, how do you identify your optimal state? How do you then trigger that state, get into the state? Then you set your timer for 5 or 10 minutes and you meditate in that state and you're hardwiring it in your nervous system so that it becomes a permanent fixture in how you feel. And so for me, bliss is my general default every day. I want to be just totally at peace, totally happy for no reason, as Marcy Shimoff would say, right? And so that's my default state. And by reinforcing that every single day for just 5 minutes in the morning, and then some days it's a specific state, but that's been a game changer for me, you know? And so that's an example of how every one of the savers, I was like, okay, here's the basic if you're brand new to meditation, but here's how you can take it to the next level when you're ready to.
I really appreciate that because you've got to be able to talk about in the book and to be able to talk about this really tiny nuanced thing that you do. And I don't really know like a ABC structure for it. Yeah. But when you read the book, you kind of get a sense of it. It's almost like one of those things you can only see it out of the corner of your eye.
Yeah.
Right? And when you hone in on a practice like that, it becomes easier and easier to see. And like, oh, I'm doing it right today. And it works well. And I didn't do it right the other day. So it is a Miracle Morning practice, which is solid.
Awesome.
Hal, thanks for making the long half-hour drive to the studios here. And... It's always a great pleasure to see you. I can't wait to hang out socially. We'll go to dinner or something. Maybe we'll see you at the Well again.
The Well, baby, yeah.
Nice. And by the way, guys, the Well is a restaurant here in Austin where we just ran into each other that has no bad oils and all grass-fed and no gluten. So,
pasture-raised chicken, yeah. Mostly organic veggies. It is the best restaurant in Austin, in my opinion.
I go there a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Awesome. Thanks, brother.
All right, brother. Appreciate you.
You're listening to The Human Upgrade with Dave Asprey.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media. Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.